Hello and welcome to Football, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast, where three gentlemen with a dearth of hair throw around the big issues in football. Today, Ford puts a foot to the floor in Newcastle. Kenny Lowe gets a gig with the Socceroos, while his old Perth Glory are on a high and top of the league at the moment. Andy Harper is here with his How to Vote card for the upcoming FFA board election. And Brenton Speed has a How to Ref red card for Chris Beath. Hello, Harps.
G'day, Muzz. How are you going?
Good.
Speedy?
Good. Hello, Speedy.
G'day, Harps. Now, good to be with you, Muzz, as well, and a great use of the word dearth in that opener.
Thank you. I have to start with my fury.
Posthumously.
Yep. I have to start with my fury at something that happened at the end of the Monday edition of the Fox Football Podcast with Daniel Garb, Adam Peacock and Carly Adno. Now, Daniel Garb, as I'm sure you'll agree, is blessed with a great head of hair. In fact, I'd go so far as to say he's got good high hair. But he finished the podcast by saying, wherever you're listening, I hope you don't get invited on the Football Podcast, which is basically saying, I hope you don't go bald. And I think this is clearly anti-baldness, and I'm not having it, Arps. I'd imagine you'd be furious, as furious as I am, and so would you, Speedy. I say embrace your baldness.
Yeah, well, for some of us, we have no choice, and that's the beauty of it. Forced embracing.
Which does give me, actually, it's probably a conversation to have on another day, about great, famous, bald footballers.
There's a few there. Alan Shearer. I was compared in likeness to Shearer by someone, which was interesting.
In what way?
Well, they reckon I was an identical twin of Alan Shearer, which okay. I didn't quite see, but some people see it. So, you know, bald people are all the same, according to some, aren't they?
Yep. All right.
Is there a rivalry between the two podcasts?
Not at all.
Monday to Wednesday?
No. But as soon as they start criticising bald people, then they're going to have a problem, aren't they?
I heard their podcast described as the flagship. Is there any chance of us becoming the flagship?
Well, are we the new up-and-coming podcast?
Maybe.
The young gun.
See how it all shakes down.
The NAB rising star of podcasts.
Garb will be keeping a look in his rearview mirror, though, rest assured, with his head full of hair. He's got options. We'd all love to have
him. I did like the fact that Adam Peacock admitted that he will be hosting this podcast within about the next couple of years. He is embracing his baldness, and we'll be happy to have him. I can hand over the reins to Adam Peacock. Delightful.
Yeah. How many shows does he want to host?
Well, that's true. All right, let's start with players we enjoyed watching on the weekend. Harps, yours was from the game that you were at in central western New South Wales, Mudgee.
Yeah, well, before we go on to my player of the week, can I go on to my venue of the season?
I was going to get to that a little bit later on if you'd like to stick to the rundown.
Okay. Well, that's the beauty of not sending me the rundown, Mars, because, you know, we fly by the seat of our pants.
Correct.
Makes for compelling listening.
You do your best work when you're ad-libbing.
I'll just stick to Brucey K then. Well, I was I did the derby match with Speedy at the cricket ground, and sort of both of us looked sideways at each other when Bruce Kamau was on the bench and the Wanderers were just pretty much fluffing their lines when they could have actually got something out of that game. And you see Bruce Kamau's form since, Speedy, and it just goes to confirm that had he played in the derby, they might have been a better thing for some points then. Anyway, don't want to get too retrospective. I thought it was great on the weekend. I'm sort of waiting for Bruce to do this consistently. That's the challenge for him, don't you reckon? Because his form at the end of his Adelaide stint, culminating in the grand final goal, fantastic. Went a bit quiet at Melbourne City after some good flashes. And let's hope this isn't another flash from Brucey K, because I think he's got a lot of potential.
I love the reaction on his face. He was startled to be given a penalty in real time, because he's been chopped down countless times in the box for clear penalties. Remember how time Bruce has just turned around and go, what's doing? You got to give me a pen there. And one was given to him eventually posthumously on VAR.
And
there have been other options where he didn't get them pre-VAR. So well done, Bruce Kamau, for being that convincing and winning a penalty you justly deserve.
We've got posthumously out of Speedy. All we need is an la, and Speed Bingo is complete for today.
Can we have a posthumous bell? Like every time he says it, like a little ding?
I'll work on it. The player I enjoyed watching on the weekend, and Harps, I cannot believe that it's taken to round four and you haven't brought this bloke's name up yet, and that is Ronnie Vargas, who was absolutely sublime, particularly in that last 20 minutes of the match on Saturday night at McDonald Jones against Sydney FC. He's just his first touch passes, His tight skills, his great technique, and you'd have to think probably an enormous chance for individual honours at season's end. And I know Harps is one of your favourites.
Well, yeah, I tipped him to be the Johnny Warren medalist, but, you know, one does that at the start of the season before any form's on the board. But I think if my feeling with Ronnie, and I love watching his type of player, and we saw snippets of it last year until he got injured, that if he gets a run of injury-free football, he's the type who can set the competition alight, and I agree with you, Muzz. The reason why I haven't mentioned him after the start of the season is because then you sound like you've got a vested interest in the players you're pumping up, and I don't want to give that impression. I'll let other people talk about Ronnie. I've made my feelings very clear.
You tend to dribble a bit. You tend to dribble a bit from the corner of your mouth when you mention him.
Go weak at the knees, all that sort of stuff. But good on you. I agree with you. He's brilliant. He's totally brilliant. You know what? He's the type. I know we're going to get onto the Matildas later. Congratulations to him last night. And this will come up in that discussion. But he is the type of player we've got to get our young kids watching.
Couldn't agree more. Speedy, you wanted to give a rap to a defender, which is great.
Yeah, I was in Adelaide and the Perth Glory came to town and Shane Lowry produced the best block in A-League history, just about. The way that
I love a big call and you love a big call.
He flew from the clouds. Ben Halloran is pulling the trigger. He thinks, I'm picking out the bottom corner. Lowry flew into the frame and got a perfect block in. It reminded me of the Chelsea championship winning season a few years back when Cahill and Terry were doing similar stuff, putting their body on line and saved countless goals and won them the championship. And some people say defence wins championships, and Shane Lowry might be well on the way to helping Perth do that this season because they're on fire. And at the back, they look impenetrable at times. And the fact that Shane Lowry did it with the biggest hunchback this side of Notre Dame makes it all even more phenomenal.
Now, on that, Speedy, the top three at the moment in the Alex Tobin Award are all defenders. Shane Lowry, Cisse from the Central Coast Mariners, and Stephen Taylor from Wellington Phoenix. What do we make of that? Do we have a great group of defenders in the A-League at the moment, or are they standing out more? Harps, what do you think?
Good question. Interesting that two of them are from the perennial trouble children is in the Mariners and Wellington. And maybe Wellington and the Mariners' first good couple of weeks gave people a reason to look pretty positively at them. Suffice to say that the causes of both have come crashing down in recent weeks. And another performance by Stephen Taylor, like on the weekend, he's not going to be at the top of the Tobin points for much longer, in my humble opinion. But I will say about Speedy, who's been pumping for Ryan Lowry just to get the Quasimodo.
Shane Lowry.
Yep. Whatever. The Quasimodo nickname out there. Good on you, Speedy. Well done.
What about
is it the hunchback of Notre Dame or the hunchback of Notre Dame, Harps? Because you like your
Notre Dame. Fighting Irish.
Can we read anything into the fact that four of the coaches in the current A-League were great defenders? Kevin Muscat, Mark Rudin, Tony Popovich and Marco Kurtz. Are they just passing on the trade brilliantly to their pupils?
You'd hope so. You'd hope that's why we get these great coaches involved to sort of make the quality of the league go up. And right now, maybe defending is going through the roof and attacking needs to pick up a little bit. But we'll wait and see how that unfolds in the coming weeks.
All right, we'll get to the popification or the popolution of Perth shortly. But let's start with last night, that being Tuesday night. The Matildas with a big 5-0 win over Chile, as Speedy has told me I must call it. A great second half. Speedy, what did you make of the performance? And not just last night, but certainly the game on Saturday in Penrith as well.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I went and saw some Chilean people in the crowd. And I asked them, how do you say the country you're from? And they go, Chile. It's Chile. And I go, okay, I've sorted out the Chile. And they go, but, and this was yesterday in Newcastle, and they said, but, are you the commentator? He's the commentator. And they were going nuts and they were saying, you're killing me saying Chilean. We're not Chilean, we're Chilean.
So Chilean, but Chile,
from Chile.
But from Chile.
How does that work?
I love the fact you learned something on this podcast, Speedy.
That is amazing.
Got any more gems for us?
Anyway, I thank them for it. And they drove home last night all the way from Newcastle to Melbourne.
To Santiago.
after watching their country in action. So credit to them for hitting the road. And unfortunately for them, they saw their team spanked 5-0. But Alan Stajic would have learnt a lot out of these two games. It's a World Cup year next year for the Matildas, and they didn't expect to be beaten on their home patch on Saturday afternoon in Penrith, and they were found out defensively a few times. They want to play out from the back. Alloway and Williams weren't on the same page. Then Kennedy came off the bench. She made a mistake, and Chile were able to get the 3-2 win. But then Australia bounced back last night. I think the breeze was a big factor, and once Australia was able to pin them in and Chile couldn't get any penetrating balls out of their own defence, Australia just turned the screws, and Caitlin Ford showed what an athlete she is and what a finisher she is with a hat-trick, first one of her career.
And good news for the Matildas overnight in the fact that Switzerland and the Netherlands drew 1-1, which means that Australia will probably maintain that position as sixth. They definitely will.
Yeah.
Sixth in the world rankings, which means they'll be one of the seeds when the World Cup draw is conducted in Paris in December. Tell me this, Harps, in a one-off game against Chile at the World Cup, do we beat them?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think over the course of the two games, the performance was pretty good, actually. Three horrible defensive blunders, really, really poor discipline and focus and lack of concentration, and coughed up three goals in the first game. And it was pretty even, Stephen, not just on the scoreboard, but the Matildas looked a little chastened and nervous in that first half. But in the second half, and you know what, Caitlin Ford was just unstoppable. God, she played well. It was fantastic. But I reckon the canary in the coal mine for this team at the moment is Emily Van Egmond. Because in the first half, and fantastic player, Emily, in the first half, she was just not quite at her best. Things weren't altogether coming off. Speedish had a couple of those attacks on goal, and the last pass was either hit short or overhit or intercepted. But in the second half, when the team, inspired by Caitlin Ford, started really ticking over and looking unbeatable, Van Egmond was in the middle. She looked another class, even on top of herself. And so much rides sometimes on individual players, even in a team game. And I think I'm putting Emily in that category. On the base of the first half, we need someone like Alex Chidiak in there controlling the tempo of the game, because we just were unable to do it, I didn't think, in that first half. And Chile looked pretty dangerous in potential, but the second half was just a one-horse race. Fantastic, fantastic performance.
Yeah, and there was a tweak of Van Egmond's position. In the first half, she played as a six, as the base of midfield. And then in the second half, when Kellen Knight came in to play that role, Van Egmond switched to a 10 role, and maybe that's where she flourished. And I think maybe in a 10 role is where she should be housed more permanently with the Matildas. The player that I thought a lot of the play broke down through in that first half was Chloe Legazzo, who's the only player to have appeared in every game under Alan Stajic this year. I think she'll have to go away and work on her game a little bit with Sydney FC, because a lot of the ball just went out off Chloe Legazzo for throw-ins to the opposition, and it was a little frustrating at times watching it all break down. But gee, Ellie Carpenter was so impressive, the teenage fullback, both in the right back role and then late in the left back role. Her engine is as good as anyone in Australian football.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Just up and down, not like a 100 metre runner, like a 400, 800 metre runner. Just did not stop. Incredible engines.
And on that Legazzo front as well, Emily Gilnick comes on and is an imposing athlete, two-footed as well. She's a right footer, and she goes first time left foot bottom corner, thanks very much, from outside the box, beating Endler, who was tough to beat across the two-game series. I think Emily Gilnick is on an upward curve, and if she continues at that rate with the Melbourne victory, then I think she could be pressing for a start come the World Cup.
And we should give a rap to Chile too, Harps, who were quite impressive over the two games, because no one gave them much hope given their world ranking.
No, well organised. I like the coach. I like what he's done with his team, and they don't have the firepower of Australia. And this is where I want to tie it back into the Ronnie Vargas discussion, because when the game flicked into a power equation, Australia just overran them. And mate, they were awesome to watch.
When Chile got tired,
Exactly. So when we can overrun teams, when it's a power differential, players like Caitlin Ford are pretty hard in international women's football to beat. When her touch and goal scoring's on top of it, she's a phenomenal prospect. When the game was not in the power discussion, when it was a more nuanced game in the first half, Chile looked very, very dangerous in the individual technique thing. And, you know, this is when, well, I like watching players like Ronnie Vargas, who use their body on the ball and just, you know, in an individual situation, determine the pace and flow of a game. And in that first half, Chile's players could do the same thing. And this is a concern, not just for the Matildas, but for the Socceroos and for our club teams playing internationally. We're still not enough far enough down that transition from the power game into the subtle game. And that's why more players like Ronnie Vargas should be brought to the A-League. And when they're here, their individual technique and style should be captured and promoted to the youth of Australia. If they play in the backyard and as they play their small-sided football and futsal, this is how you control your own momentum and the momentum of the game. Because when we bring that to us, our teams coupled with the power quotient, the Socceroos and Matildas are going to look really good.
And that's what was so exciting about Daniel Arzani. He would have that similar technical ability to make the time stand still, beat a player with some skill, and then whip in a telling ball.
And your point, I suppose, Harps, is another reason why you like the likes of Bruno Fornaroli, Marcos Flores. They get their bums into the defenders and then hold the ball, use the defender and roll away.
Yep. There's two things that Australian players, Mars, you bang on, mate, you bang on. There's two things that Australian players don't do by culture and by nature and by training, and that's stick their bum as a shield into someone who's trying to come and get the ball and use the sole of the foot to kill the ball dead, a la Speedy, Bruno Fornaroli's goal last week. First up, first touch was to kill it with the sole of his foot, like futsal. The second was to score. Jason Collini used to do this really well. He was an outstanding example of an Australian player who did use the sole of his foot a lot. And the South Americans, the Latinos, just do it by upbringing. It's fantastic to watch.
All right. So the Matildas, my understanding is, will probably have a couple of more games in March. Mm. Is that right, Speedy? Before they obviously embark on the World Cup campaign in France midway through next year.
Yeah, after the W League season comes to an end, they'll be hunting as many games as they can get, and also where they go to for a training camp in the lead up to the World Cup, probably maybe in an Austria or a Germany where they can get some lead up games going there. Because if they went to Turkey, for instance, where the Socceroos had a great training facility, they can't get opposition to come that way. So look for them to probably be closer to France.
And well done to the people of Newcastle and Penrith who turned out in their droves to watch the Matildas. Long may it continue. Let's move on to the A-League. And Harps, you touched on it before, so I'll let you have your say. Mudgee as a venue. I know that you were quite excited.
Well, it was brilliant. I mean, the players, Johnny Aloisi was talking large in the post-match press conference about the quality of the playing surface. That facility out at Mudgee is brilliant. You'd go to a rural centre like that, and if you're going to play in a cow paddock, that's where you think you'd get one. But it was like Wembley. I mean, the guys playing on it reckon it was as good as they've ever played on anywhere on the planet. And to think that we go to Mudgee for those experiences, and some of our big city stadiums, in fact, are the ones that dish up the cow paddocks from time to time, is just quite remarkable. The ground staff out there did a brilliant job. The Wanderers, Muzz and Speedy, did just a fantastic job in promoting this.
Yep.
They had the bunting down the street lights and power poles. Mudgee was black and red for the week. Johnny Tatsimus, over the 9 months in preparation, was sending various parts of the Wanderers football business units out, the commercial people, the community people, the youth coaches, to spend time out there. And the facility was great. The game was really good. The only disappointment, I think, was that the Matildas were playing in Penrith on the same day. I mean, even if that took 50 people away from a Wanderers match or 50 people away from the Matildas game, why did that game have to be scheduled in Penrith?
Well, there was actually three games all in New South Wales on Saturday.
What's doing there? Why not take the Matildas to another market? I don't know. Anyway.
Well, you can't take a Matildas game away from Penrith the way that they support them.
You can't do it.
Well, I'm saying you shouldn't do it because they're coming out, as I said, turning out in their droves to watch the Matildas. So why take it away from them?
Or to give someone else a chance to turn out in their droves. I would have thought that was fairly obvious, Murray.
Yeah, okay, all right. With regional games, Speedy, they were forced. Have we lost Andy Harper?
We're getting a call.
Someone's just phoning in on the Andy Harper line. With regional games, Speedy, the Wanderers were forced to go to Mudgee because they don't have a home ground at the moment, and it was a fantastic spectacle. We all agree. 5,000 people turned up. But is it something we should persist with? We've tried it. We've been there before. There's been some great successes, but there's also been some disasters with regional games. Is it something that we should continue with?
I think so. I was lucky enough in the NRL last season to go to Tamworth for a game, and you get a packed house. If you let everyone know early enough, the fans are going to roll out saying, well, top-level sport is coming to our neck of the woods. We're going to get behind it. And it makes for great television. You get packed stands. And as Harps described, I mean, Mudgee had a great playing surface. Tamworth has a phenomenal playing surface. So these curators need to get poached into the big smoke. And they can make the pitches a bit better in the metropolitan centres.
Marquee curators, that's what we need. a marquee fund for marquee curators. That's what we need. All right, let's move on. VAR reared its ugly head again in Adelaide on Sunday. You were there, Speedy. And I know, Andy Harper, that you're not on Twitter. And I don't follow Brenton Speed on Twitter ever since an incident at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, in a match between Brazil and Croatia. But it was shown to me, Speedy doing calisthenics with a pained expression on his face, trying to show the fact that Chris Beath had got his VAR decision wrong. Now, I should point out, Harps, that Speedy and Chris Beath have a love-hate relationship, which basically means Chris Beath loves Chris Beath and Brenton Speed hates Chris Beath. It seems to be how it works. So he's never been Chris Beath's biggest fan, but I didn't agree with you. I thought Chris Beath actually handled this one quite well, Speedy, but the floor is yours.
Well, Chris Beath. He's given a handball against Shane Lowry after checking with Matthew Cream. And you watch Chris Beath, he's looking around everywhere and then finally makes the decision after Matthew Cream says, I think it's outside. So he goes, righto, handball outside. Craig Zetter is sitting back with the HD screen at the VAR centre and he's not going to weigh in, Craig Zetter, is he? He's not going to weigh in if the decision is correct or even maybe questionably whether it's correct. He only weighs in if it's 100% a penalty. So he has the view, after watching all the angles, that he sees that Shane Lowry is handballed inside the box. Now, what I'm also mentioning before with the Hunchback of Notre Dame reference is the fact that Shane Lowry would have to be the biggest hunchback this side of Notre Dame for him to have handled that ball outside the box, because it's a physical impossibility if you are standing as far as he was inside the box to handle it outside. That is Craig Zetter making that assessment. He's watched the replays. He tips up Chris Beath to come over, and Chris Beath is on the sideline looking at screens that have a bit of sunlight flickering in, and he's not sure whether he can overrule himself. So he comes up with that call. Craig Zetter has told him it's clearly inside.
Can I just make this point, Speedy, before Harps, I'm sure you'll want to interject. Fox Sports has 10 cameras on that game. Mm. The nearest one, which was, and probably the most relevant camera for that decision was our offside camera, which was blocked by another player.
Yeah.
So the angle that we were looking at was from a camera which is on halfway. Yeah. Okay. There are 10 cameras on that game. Yeah. The nearest one, the most relevant one, is probably what, 60 to 80 meters away from the incident. Chris Beath is 3 or 4 meters away from the incident. He might actually have a better view of it than our TV cameras. And that's what he said.
He didn't make a call. Chris Beath didn't make a call.
He did make a call.
I explained to you that Matthew Cream made the call on his behalf.
For the handball?
Yes.
So then the decision comes down to whether it was inside the box or outside the
box.
And I'm saying that Chris Beath probably had a better angle of it than our TV cameras.
But Chris Beath's not making his assessment on his original call.
That's going to happen at times, that the referee's going to have a better angle than the viewers at home.
But Craig,
because they're out there.
Craig Zetter is happy with the view and happy with his assessment of human biology.
So Craig Zetter says you might want to go. He says you might want to go and have a look at this.
You should have a look because inside.
He says you might want to go and have a look at this because it could be inside.
No.
Chris Beath goes over to the
No.
I can't tell whether it's inside or outside. It's not a howler. I had a better view than that camera. I'm happy with my decision, and I'm happy with that.
But Craig Zetter is not saying it could be. He is saying it definitely is. Otherwise, he doesn't weigh in. We've been through that. The VAR doesn't step in unless it's a clear decision.
Go on, Hubs.
Well,
bing, bing, bing. Back to your corners.
But that was brilliant. That was, I mean, let's go to round two. I love watching that.
It's a heavyweight fight, let me assure you.
Butterbean.
Clubber Lang versus Butterbean.
That's right. Mate, I can't see what the fuss is about. I mean, the referee, Craig Zetter's not the ref. He's a video ref. Chris Beath is in charge. Craig Zetter advises him. Speedy, unless you've spoken to Craig Zetter and that's what he's told you, or you're making assumptions.
I know what Craig Zetter has thought. And Craig Zetter,
I've dropped.
I didn't speak to Craig Zetter directly, but I know through other people what's happened. Yeah.
Right. Well, then I'm with Muzz. I'm with Chris Beath. I think that he made an assessment based on the information that was provided to him. It was far from compelling, despite the fact that you've got the grid lines out on your video screen and you've done an anatomical equation about the stooped neck of Lowry and angles of balls and all that sort of stuff. I think, mate, to the punter watching at home, and I was one of them on the night, how the hell you could tell categorically that was a wrong call? You couldn't, so you go with the ref's first call. I thought it was well handled. And what I did like, this is an assumption on my part now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when Chris Beath did make the final call, he called the captains over, I think, and quickly explained what was going on. If he did that, I thought that was a great piece of management by the referee. I thought the system was fine. Yeah, no problem.
Now, discussions on VAR on podcasts should be like use of VAR in football games. That should be short and only if necessary. So I realise that we've gone on for a while about that, so we will move on, but we'll just call it 2-1, Shaw and Harper beat Speed. let's talk about Perth because they were fantastic. Andy Keogh, I watched Andy Keogh walk. I was in Adelaide with you, of course, Speedy. I watched Andy Keogh walk into the ground. Talk about a steely determination, and he just exemplifies what's going on there at Perth at the moment. They are a different unit, and we must give credit to Tony Popovich for what he's done in such a short period of time with Perth Glory. And just quickly before we get your thoughts on that, I did check with our guys from the stats department about how this start for Perth Glory ranks with their glory days, pardon the pun and overused cliche, and the last time Perth had 10 points in their first four games was back in 2003-04 when they were the champions of the NSL. Prior to that, 2001-02 when they were runners-up in the NSL, and then also in 1998-99. So it's all looking good that this is going to be a big year for Perth Glory.
And Andy Keogh was asked, what's changed? What's the difference? And he said, the coach.
Yeah.
First thing he said. So I think they're all buying into Tony Popovich and the way he goes about things. And they know it will probably bring success for them. And they certainly look to be on that way. And Keogh has come up with a goal in the first four rounds of the league. Chianese's playing good football. He knows he has to keep his standards up because Diego Castro is not too far away from returning. I think One Day and Neil Kilkenny are the most underrated central defensive combo in the comp. And I've already praised Lowry, and Alex Grant deserves praise as well.
Yep.
For the way that he just commands his area and wins header after header emphatically.
And Davidson as well, playing very well. Harps, Spiranovic and Castro, I mean, it's almost hard to put them into that team at the moment.
Well, certainly Matt Spiranovic. I think with Castro you find somewhere for him if he's fit because he's such a magical player.
And, of course.
But Matt Spiranovic might have the dickens of a time getting into that team. They're just playing so well and it's got Popovich's fingerprints all over it. And this is the difference between a team of talented players that enjoyed playing football and had a go, as Perth have been over the last few years, against a team with a real edge on them. And, mate, they're going to be hard to shake. A lot of people's pre-season predictions are bearing fruit already. Whether they win it or not, he's turned the organisation in the direction it needed to go.
And they did have... They did have Dino Djulbic as one of their starting three central defenders, if you like, on the weekend. So Spiranovic could slot in there.
Now, just some more stats about Perth's start to the season. They've already matched their regular season away win total from 2016-17 and are just one behind their three away wins from last season. So the away clean sheets also matches their totals from the regular season in each of the past 2 years. So he's certainly tightened them up defensively. There's no doubt about that.
And they beat the champions, Melbourne Victory away,
yep.
And they beat the FFA Cup champions, Adelaide United away.
Yep.
Not a bad double, first up.
And they're becoming a great team to watch. Let's leave the A-League there for the moment as we tick sort of towards the half an hour mark and look ahead to the Socceroos, because there's no A-League, of course, this weekend, with the Socceroos taking on South Korea on Saturday night at Suncorp Stadium and then Lebanon on Tuesday in Sydney. I guess the news over the past 24 hours that might have surprised some, and it follows straight on from Perth Glory, is that Kenny Lowe has been included into the coaching staff as one of Graham Arnold's assistants, with Ante Milicic deciding to stay overseas and act as a scout. The other change in the coaching staff saw the former Wimbledon Spurs goalkeeper Hans Sagers in, and long-time Aussie goalkeeping coach Tony Franken deciding not to continue. What did you make of that, Ups?
Yeah, well, I didn't know what to make of it, to be honest with you. It certainly caught me by surprise. I thought the Socceroos staff has been pretty settled, and maybe Graham Arnold has decided it's been too settled, or maybe some of the people involved have decided it was time that they moved in another direction. I certainly wasn't expecting it. The only thing to say is about Kenny Lowe, and good on him. He's got a fantastic reputation as a coach, Kenny Lowe. He had his time at Perth. They couldn't quite crack it for reasons we're sort of discussing and learning about as we watch Perth now. But that doesn't take away from, you know, the football quotient of the Kenny Lowe makeup. And if Graham Arnold sees something he wants, good on him, and I'm looking forward to seeing it work.
Phil, you are one of the most popular men going around. This phone is just ringing non-stop. Speedy, what did you make of the coaching changes?
Well, Kenny Lowe, he actually moved from head coach at Perth Glory to the technical director role, and then that gig went by the wayside in recent weeks, and Stephen McGarry has actually become the technical director at the Perth Glory.
Another congratulations to him.
Interesting appointment. So Kenny Lowe comes in. I think it's just a trial for these couple of games, and then maybe see how he and Arnie click. The banter will certainly go up a notch with Kenny Lowe in camp, and also he coached the likes of Sainsbury and Risdon through that WA Centre of Excellence, and they rap him as being the best coach they've ever had. I think I've seen that said before. Yep. So, you know, if he can bring the best out of those guys, and Kenny Lowe is one of the smartest dudes we've ever had coaching in the A-League. I mean, he's got an engineering background that could make him squillions in the West, but he elected to be a head coach for a long time because he loves football. So if he's back in the game with that kind of passion, then we welcome it.
Harps, interesting comments from Mark Milligan in a press conference yesterday when he was asked about Graham Arnold taking over the reins. He said it was good to have an Aussie coach back in charge again, which I don't know whether that was a veiled swipe at Bert van Marwijk, but how do you assess the van Marwijk tenure, if you like? I mean, I know we've moved on from that, but it seems to be that's what he was having a go at.
Yeah, well, there'll be nothing veiled in this swipe. It was a waste of time.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it was said it at the time. I think it was disastrous. Zero legacy, high cost, put the farm on it, roll of the dice to get through to the round of 16, and it just failed miserably, in my opinion. The players didn't. I'm going to be very quick to suggest and repeat. I thought the players were magnificent. I thought the coaching performance and the general demeanour of Bert van Marwijk has set a standard to which we should never, ever return.
Strong words, pretty emphatic.
Martin Boyle is going to play for the Socceroos, hopefully for the upcoming matches against South Korea and Lebanon. He said on his Instagram page it was good to step down in Australia for the first time in his life, or touch down in Australia for the first time in his life. South Korea, you two guys are calling the game. What can you tell us about South Korea?
Well, unfortunately, no Son Heung-min coming to town, but he has avoided military service, hasn't he, with that win at the Asian Games, but still a very competitive squad coming as well, and a new Portuguese boss as well with, you know, great pedigree back home in Portugal. So they'll be tough to beat at a venue where, of course, they knocked off the Socceroos at the last Asian Cup and actually topped the group. Easy to forget. And then Australia went on to get redemption in the final in extra time, of course, a 2-1 victory. But it's going to be interesting to see how South Korea are shaping up, minus Son Heung-min ahead of the Asian Cup in January.
All right, let's whip through a few things as time is getting away from us. Let's start with the FFA board election on Monday, Harps. How do you see it playing out? I know you're not a Nostradamus and I know you hate tipping, but how do you see this one unfolding?
Well, mate, it's a bowl of spaghetti at the moment, isn't it? Who knows what's going on? I have one thing to say, two things to say on the same point, and it'll do me. Firstly, I want the stakeholders to elect people to the board who are there to serve the game. not people who are looking to have the game serve their interests. That's point one. And the second word to the stakeholders is that if they look at this candidature and they can't find a place on this board for Craig Foster, I don't know what I'll do. I don't know what I'll think. He is such a standout for the type of skill set he brings, keeping in mind that, of course, you need different types of capacities for a functional board. In the little bubble that Craig Foster operates in that consideration, I can't see anyone better than him. And if the stakeholders don't give him a red card, I don't know how I'm going to cope with that. So let's hope they get it right. I think there's the potential for a really strong and positive board out of this, to be honest, and we can really get cracking.
It's all happening very quickly. Is that fair to say? Is this really quick, the charm offensive of all these candidates trying to get onto the board, going around the country, kissing babies and all that? it's come out of the blue, and David Gallop and the like sitting there at FFA wondering if they'll have a gig in a week's time.
Well, I mean, that of course would need to be sorted out when the board gets constructed. This is what the board needs to do, though. Let's get onto this one, because the politics is driving people crazy. And I think we're part of that group. We just want it done. When this board is elected and when it's convened, is it fair to say that we all expect that board to meet and to keep on meeting and keep on deciding until they've green-lighted the process for A-League expansion next season? Is that a fair representation of what we all expect from this new board?
I think a lot of people would agree with you.
What do you think?
Oh, I agree.
Well, what are the chances of expansion under this new board, do you think?
Hang on.
No, Speedy, that's the point. We have to tell them that there ain't no other way. You meet and you work through what you got to work through until you break out of the office and you go to the town crier and say, folks, we're on next season for expansion and this is how it's working. That's what people expect.
But how's that? I mean, who's telling the board what to do if you're not on the board? I mean, why would we suddenly have the power to, or people outside the board suddenly have the power to determine that should be the case?
Well, because they need to realise that there's all the rhetoric about is connecting the game with its grassroots and having a unity of purpose, right? And there are a few issues, but one of the real lightning rod issues is leadership on the A-League development issue, the expansion and the whole growth of the A-League. That's a unity ticket, Speedy. So these people talking about building a unification process for the game and they cannot pick up the ball on that one key issue is going to speak volumes to me.
Let's move on and whip around the world quickly. Asian Champions League. Congratulations to the Kashima Antlers who took that out over the weekend. Harps, I'd imagine you probably were watching the first leg of the Copa Libertadores final between Boca and River Plate. That's right up your alley. Did you catch any of that?
I did catch a little bit of that. If you've been to the Bombonera, you could feel that place through the television screens or this internet streaming or whatever it was. What an occasion. I know there was huge controversy the way Gremio got knocked out in the semi-final, but to have River and Boca, a super classico, to decide the Libertadores is a dream come true. They don't happen that often in this register for football fans, so it was a great one. But the Champions League, Muzz, Asian Champions League, that is, a first victory for Kashima in this league. They did it with a 0-0 away draw against Persepolis in Tehran.
0-0.
And the big news of the Champions League was that for the first time in almost ever, women were granted entry to the Azadi Stadium to watch Persepolis play in that final. Women made up a portion of the 100,000 crowd there. That's a big breakthrough.
The famous story about David Hill's wife sneaking into the Australia versus Iran match at the Azadi in 1997 dressed as a man, yeah, just to get past the security. Let's stay around the world. The news overnight that Harry Kewell was sacked by Notts County, having won 3 of his 14 games in charge. I found that a little bit surprising, and I guess the question now is, where to for Harry, Speedy?
He's probably wishing he'd stayed at Crawley Town, maybe, where he was sort of catching the eye with the results he was getting for them, but he left to go to the rivals and it hasn't worked out. And where to for Harry? Well, does he come back to the A-League, or There's enough gigs in England, you'd think that another one might pop up for him in a League Two or a League One, but I wonder what the ambition is and what this does for his hopes of achieving that ambition.
And speaking of great players who've turned their hand to coaching, it's been a disaster for Thierry Henry at Monaco, who after six games, he's winless, including back-to-back 4-0 losses at home against PSG last weekend and against Club Bruges or Club Brugge, depending on where you're from, in the Champions League last week. So no wins, two draws, four losses for Thierry Henry at Monaco, and they sit 19th in the table.
Yeah, I think the way they approach their football has changed a little bit. I mean, they were the breeding ground for the likes of Kylian Mbappe and Thierry Henry and all these superstars down the years, but there's not many coming through right now. But that's their attraction, isn't it, to sell those players and make squillions, but it's not coming off. And Thierry Henry doesn't have a lot of cattle to work with. There's a few players left around from a decent run in recent seasons, but they're a pale imitation of what they were. And it's going to be a tough road for Henry. I can't see it turning around anytime soon.
All right. We're almost at full time. This weekend, we have no A-League, of course. We've got the Socceroos taking on South Korea at Suncorp Stadium on Saturday night. In the W League, Friday night, we've got a Melbourne derby. So the Matildas straight back into action. Certainly Elise Kellen Knight and also Tamika Butt, you'd think, would be in the City side when they take on a Victory at Amy Park on Friday night. That's live on Fox Sports. And then on Saturday, we have Newcastle versus Canberra, Perth Glory versus the Western Sydney Wanderers. And on Sunday, it's Brisbane versus Adelaide. I don't think I need to ask you two what you're looking forward to this weekend. That will, of course, be being behind the microphone at Suncorp Stadium for the Socceroos clash with South Korea.
Definitely looking forward to it, and it's a VAR-free weekend. I just want to clarify, I don't hate Chris Beath. He's actually pretty good company. But on the weekend as well,
I
actually forecast what was happening. There was a set piece, attacking set piece, and Chris Beath was giving warnings, and then as soon as the ball was played in, Chris Beath goes, offensive foul. It's always against the attacking team. And we don't get to see the potential of a goal scored off an attacking set piece. He's too negative in his refereeing at times, which is denying goal-scoring opportunities.
But
by definition.
But you don't hate him.
Speedy, how the hell, Speedy, did you cope with that ref in the Matildas game last night then?
Oh, I gave her a little touch-up, little spray as well. Wasn't happy with her work. One she missed on Chidiak late was just out of this world.
No, it's pathetic. It was pathetic.
Yep.
All right, we've got to go. Andy Harper, thanks for your time again this week.
Thank you. See ya.
Brenton Speed, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Murray.
You've been listening to Football, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Daniel Garb and his crew, no doubt Simon Hill as well, will be back on Monday. We'll see you then.